welcome everybody to the Pazzo's Podcast. It is our first inaugural episode. I am here with Kevin and Jason, and we are going to be talking about some beer tonight. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. You know, once I got down here and kind of got my corner away from everybody to where I could set up everything correctly, it's feeling pretty good now.
Yeah, it feels excellent to me. I got a beer in hand, and I'm ready to talk about beer. You guys give me free reign with a microphone and an hour to talk about beer, and all of a sudden, this is going to be a bad decision. There's no question about it.
Well, it's a comfortable little nook, too, down here.
I need to work on that, though. I don't have a beer in my hand. I have a microphone in my hand. I need a beer. You guys have the headsets, though, and that's what I need because that makes it so easy to drink and talk at the same time.
That would help. We got to get you a fancy smancy Marv Albert headset, don't
yeah, we'll work on that.
Yeah.
So, all right, tonight I just want to, cover the basics up front, because this is going to be our first episode. Whenever somebody comes in and checks out our podcast, this is what they're going to see first. So I want to say, who are we? So, Kevin, you can start it off. Who are you?
Yeah, I'm Kevin Patterson. If you're well-versed in craft beer, then you've probably been to Beer Trap. You've probably seen me behind the beer. Behind the bar there, serving your best craft beers. I'm a certified Cicerone, which makes me equivalent to a sommelier for wine, but I do it for craft beer. It's much more approachable. It's much more easy. I really enjoy it a lot. I'm also a BJCP national judge, which makes me a professional beer judge. It means I get to pay to drink beer and tell you what I think about them.
That's incredible. How do I go about doing that?
Well, first of all, I'm really upset at my high school career counselor for not telling me that this is a viable option. She wanted me to be an accountant. She wanted me to be an architect. She wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer, but she didn't tell me, but a professional drunk could actually make some money, so I'm a little upset at her for that.
Well, they didn't tell me that I could do a podcast about being a professional drunk, so we're kind of even there. Yep. Jason, who are you?
I'm Jason Ritchie. I'm the chef at the Village Idiot. I also run Pazzo's Pizza Pub. And we also have another restaurant opening up in June, hopefully, Bear and the Butcher down on Chevy Chase. I went to culinary school. I've worked in a bunch of great restaurants. And we have our gastro pub downtown where we do seasonal menus, change it up every 3 months. And one of the big things that we do down there is beer pairing dinners where we'll take a brewery or a certain style of beer, and we'll pair different dishes with each beer, and then we'll have a welcome beer, and then we go through each course, and each beer is meant to make the food better, and the food is meant to make the beer better. So I work with pairing all of this craft beer and all of those different flavors with really great food.
See, I just like to drink it, so I never really knew or understood the fact that there was a pairing whole thing with it. But now it makes sense because sometimes I can drink a beer and be eating something, and, I don't really like that beer. But then I come back a few weeks later, I'm eating something else because I'm always eating. But I come back a few weeks later, and I actually love that beer. So it kind of makes sense that pairings would, they would actually complement each other.
Beer is food, and, anytime that you could take one and make it complement the other and make the other better, then that's always what I'm up for.
Yeah. Well, Garrett Oliver of the Brooklyn Brewery said it best. He said, beer has more to do with food than it does to do with like wine does or bourbon does or anything else, because those other cultures actually have stigmas where you have to adhere to rules or else you're not that thing. Terroir, they like to celebrate those things really big in wine. When it comes to bourbon, it's got to be 50% this ingredient, 51% this ingredient. It's got to be aged for this time, this specific barrel. He says whenever it comes to beer, he says the entire pantry of the planet is at your disposal. What he means by that, he says the beer is part of the culinary art movement. If you like better food, you're going to like better beer. Brewers generally aren't limited necessarily by the geographic location they're in. They can be if they want to be. They can celebrate things that are local. They can celebrate the ingredients that are kind of their backyard. But they can pull things. They can pull grain from one side of the planet, a hops from another side, a fruit from here, a spice from there, and all of a sudden the entire planet becomes your pantry. So that's the same thing that chefs do whenever they're at the table. For instance, if you want a traditional shrimp and grits, there's restaurants for that. But if you want, something a little bit more, maybe you want duck with your grits. Maybe you want some sort of bolognese or something like that on top of there. You're not limited to what your backyard gives you, like in some of those other industries suggest that you do. And so whenever it comes to beer, they think the same way. You can use any ingredient in beer if you're willing to build the culinary art, if you're willing to celebrate the flavor of those things, just like you do those chefs in those kitchens. Beer does the same thing, at least as craft beers are doing the same thing to today's beer market.
Another thing I think that works really well with pairing beer and food is that the versatility of beer really pairs to bringing it into complement or contrast a dish that you're eating. I mean, if you have a really fatty dish that you're eating, something that's really rich, then a sour or something that's really crisp and carbonated is really going to pair nicely, whereas some of those other types of drinks like wine or bourbon or whatever you're trying to pair, those are it's a much narrower focus, so you're not going to get quite the tight pairing that you do with beer. You know, if I have something that's really light that I'm eating, then I'm going to pair a certain type of beer with it. If I have something that's really heavy or sweet, then I'm going to pair a different type of beer with it. Whereas wine, all wine is going to taste like wine. Sure, you're going to be able to pull out a little bouquet of this flavor or that flavor, but you're not really going to change. It's still wine. Whereas with beer, beer's versatility is endless. I mean, you can go from super bitter and hoppy to very sweet and sour, or all this whole, you know, cascade of spectrum of flavors. And I think that is what the magic between pairing beer and food is, that any good pairing, the beer makes the food better and the food makes the beer better.
You know, I kind of find it crazy that, like, average Joe Budweiser doesn't really know that, hey, there's this whole world of beers that just doesn't involve his red can, you know? I mean, there are all kinds of different things that you can go and drink, and it doesn't have to necessarily be the whole stigma that is, you know, oh, craft beer, that's for nerds, you know? I mean, there's all kinds of different stuff out there that tastes fantastic if you're just willing to open your mind to it.
Yeah, a great guy came into the beer trap not too long ago, and we're during the shift change, and all of a sudden I get settled in, and he says, hey, I usually only drink Coors Light. And he looked at me and he says, what do you got to say about that? He expected me to have some sort of reaction. And so my actual thought is, I took a second, I paused, and I said, okay, so the only thing you eat is oyster crackers? Well, no. I said, what else do you like to eat? You like ribeye on occasion? You like hot dogs? You like cheeseburgers? Care for a slice of pizza? He's like, yeah, I like all those things. And I said, so whenever it comes to the food that you choose, you're going to vary up those flavors based on your mood, based on your taste. And there's certain things that go, the seasons matter. Those sort of things start to matter. But when you're beer, you just turn that part of your brain off. It's still culinary art. You can still choose other things if you want to. Sure, if you're at the ballpark, if it's the 4th of July and you're looking to quench the thirst, maybe then, yeah, you do go for that light lager because you're not looking for a complex set of culinary arts coming at your palate. Maybe you just want something crisp, clean, and refreshing just to make the thirst go away. But then there's other times when you're a little bit more demanding of what you're wanting out of what you put in your mouth, and so beer offers that too. But you have to go to the craft side of beer and get away from the industrial lager side. I'm the last person in the world that's ever going to bash what, you know, the industrial light lager side does. But I just want to see craft beer and all these other flavors and all these other cultures and all these other brewers and all these hardworking families and people like that who put these craft beers together. I want to see them operating on a level playing field. And so how I do that is I uplift the craft brewer, uplift those flavors they represent, because they do so much more wide variety than the light lagers do. Those are fine beers, but they have their place. And so I think craft beer also has a lot of other places too.
I think I kind of agree. I'm not so diplomatic, though. I think you like what you like, and I'm never going to bash anybody if they truly like that. But I do sort of look at it as ignorance, too, because I've never had a light lager that I didn't find a better version in some type of European lager or some type of Japanese lager, where I think those are just better made beers. It's sort of like going even to fast food. Say fast food, you get a burger. But there are good fast food burgers and there are, you know, not so good fast food burgers. So I do agree you like what you like, but I'm not going to say that they're not ignorant to the fact that there are better beers out there that are even in the style that they may like.
As a matter of fact, there was a time whenever the beer trap first opened, and folks would come into our store and they say, hey, I don't recognize anything on here. Can I just get a Coors Light? I'm sorry, sir. We don't have the Coors Light. I'm sorry, ma'am. We don't carry Coors Light. But we do have this other German lager. And at one time, they would have basically refused my decision. They refused that recommendation. They would have just said, can I just get a water instead? Now when they come into a place like ours, they say, well, we know you don't carry this. We know you don't carry that. But what do you have that's similar? Do you have something else like a Stella Artois? I'm like, not that one, but we do have something else that's real similar. So I'm happy to promote another brand, like a Prima Pils by Victory or a Scrimshaw by North Coast. So there's well-made German lagers made in America according to true German standards. But they get here so much fresher, and because they didn't have those excise taxes, they come cheaper. And so this found favor among Pilsner drinkers. So even though you love that Pilsner flavor, you don't have to reach for the mass marketing and the campaigns of the people to put bikinis on women on commercials or sell monster trucks or anything else like that. You don't have to go to banquets of beer necessarily to find a really well-made lager anymore. They're made in your own backyard. They're made across the state or maybe even across the country, and they're actually really well done. Now, to piggyback on something that Jason said earlier, he was talking about the food and pairing aspects of beer, and one thing that's really kind of that when it comes to beer, it's much more forgiving than wine is and than a lot of other drinks are. Whenever it comes to wine, if you don't pick the perfect pairing or something that's actually a really good pairing, you can ruin a dinner experience. The wine will actually make the food taste worse. And the food will make the wine taste worse if you don't choose the correct wines. You'll ruin that experience for you. Beer is much more forgiving. I find the beer, even if you don't find something that's just an absolute knock home run pairing, this still goes pretty well. It won't do much to ruin the experience because there's so much more complexities and subtleties that go into beer, and they do mirror food so much more closely than some other beverages do, that it gives beer some really decided advantages. And so whenever it comes to picking out beer and food pairings, don't be intimidated. Just go out there and go for it. Say, I think this might go with that. Try it and see. Worst case scenario, you drink a good beer, you had some good food, you probably had a pretty good night.
Another thing, I mean, if you go to Liquor Barn or you go to Shenanigans or you go to a couple of the places in town and you're looking for craft beer, a lot of the staffs, they're very knowledgeable. I mean, I've gone into Liquor Barn and had some great conversations about craft beer with some of the people that work there. Because, I mean, obviously, if they're working in a liquor store, they're interested in alcohol and beer or liquor or wine enough to know a little bit about it. Or they hear it from customers, they hear it from, you know, other workers that, you know, they've talked to. So if you have a question and you're in one of those stores, just ask one of the workers, and I'm sure that they can give you sort of a little bit of a guidance in buying something that, you know, they may not have had it themselves, but they may have had it, you know, heard about it secondhand.
So talking about pairings, you know, we're sitting at Pazzo's. Their specialty is pizza. What's some good pizza pairing?
Pizza pairings? I like crisp carbonate. Anything pizza, you've got a lot of fat, generally, you know, grease, that kind of thing, pepperoni and cheese. And I like something that's crisp, something that's sort of clean tasting. So I'll like Hefeweizens, lagers go well, sours actually go pretty well. What do you
think? Yeah, usually when you think about pizza, you think about red sauce, you think about mozzarella cheese, you think about pepperoni. Those are usually dominant flavors, and whenever I start thinking about, you know, what to put with a food, I usually say, okay, what's the two or three most dominating flavors of the meal? Then I start to say, okay, what kind of beer has one or two of those flavors that marry up? That's the resonance that happens at beer and food pairing, and that's one thing that can hook onto the other to make the whole thing work in harmony. So whenever it comes to red sauces, I usually go for an amber ale. When it comes to pepperoni and stuff like that, IPAs work particularly well. And so anything in the amber, pale ale, IPA world can always usually knock off. You're going to knock a home run with starting there. Now, earlier I had a pizza or a flatbread that had egg on it, had bacon on it, had some other wonderful flavors and some feta. So I chose a rye saison by Braxton Brewing Company, and it was fantastic. It worked real well together. So don't be afraid to get outside that wheelhouse when it comes to beer and food, because surprises are lurking around every corner. Don't be afraid to go for it.
I agree.
You know, the thing is, we're sitting here at Pazzo's. I think that the atmosphere really promotes this sort of drinking of great beers. You know, you look around, you've got all kinds of different posters and stuff that really just brings it in home. And, you know, what are we drinking tonight? What is the special of the evening?
Tonight, the pint night beer is Stone Ripper. It's a West Coast pale ale. They've taken some Cascade hops from the Northwest, and then they've also got Galaxy hops from Australia and Tasmania in there. And then it's a sort of fruity, you know, not so overbearingly hoppy beer. But I think it's really crisp, nice beer to go summertime, you know, the nice weather that we've had going through today.
The thing I think is really interesting, there's an evolution going on with an American Pale Ale. It used to be the American Pale Ale tasted just like Sierra Nevada's Pale Ale. Even though it's a fantastic beer, it's a tired style. So I think that drinkers are wanting something more out of the style. They're leaning more IPA-like even when it comes to choosing their Pale Ale. So they're going to choose a Pale Ale that's a little bit more hop forward, at least in aroma and in flavor, have that really sharp, dry finish to it without a whole lot of balance from sweetness. They don't want a whole lot of malt in these Pale Ales anymore. But at the same time, they don't want them to be as bitter as IPA either. So they're pulling back on the bitterness. They're really celebrating the hop aroma and hop flavor with those newfound hops that, now grow in the lands down under and on the Pacific Northwest. And they're really celebrating with a high regard, higher than those classic Pale Ales used to. So that's what Stone Ripper has kind of done. And here, they've modernized the Pale Ale. They brought it into the 2017 world. And I think they just knocked it out of the park. I think they've done a really good job with that beer.
One thing I think that's really cool about the Pale Ales that are going on now is a lot of people say that they don't like IPAs. And I think that Pale Ales, if you don't like hops, or if you say you don't like IPAs because of the hops, I think that is maybe not the truth. I think a lot of people get into IPAs and they don't like the bitterness. And I think if they used the hoppy pale ales as an introduction to IPAs, it really works well to sort of introduce them to the style and those sort of flavors that they're not really used to. And maybe if they start off with a lower IBU, a lower bitterness pale ale that has those hop characters, then maybe it's a good introduction to them to maybe expand on later on once they gain a small appreciation for those flavors.
And I agree. Oddly enough, sometimes people say, I can't get into IPAs, I've tried. But they want to get into hops in general. That's like, I know there's appreciation here, but I can't get there. Maybe that's something we follow up in the next segment.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of which, this is the end of our first episode. Guys, can you believe it? We got through it.
Oh, my goodness. That was quick.
That was quick.
Yeah.
Let's do this again.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening to the Pazos podcast. Please come back and listen to some more.